Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Before we get started with our guest, Alexander Petikoff, and cryptids and Bigfoot and all that other good stuff, I wanted to talk with Tim Swartz about one or two things. As you remember, because you forwarded it to me, there was this list that was provided by Mindy Todfest, our guest last week, showing some of the people who represented Hayden Hughes UFO group in the mid-1960s. You recall that one?
Oh, yes.
And one of them was a guy named Steinberg. And I'll give you the address because I don't even think the post office is there anymore. Box 87, Rugby Station, Brooklyn, New York, 11212. Hmm. And I looked at that, and it reminded me of something. So let's go back to 1963. You'll know what I'm talking about. I had the box there because I had a small UFO club, and this way I could get mail, and my parents wouldn't be bothered with it. Simple as that. So I kept the box. It also looks fancier than a home address to have a box address. Now it doesn't matter. So I took my bicycle and drove to the post office. This is late afternoon. And everybody was very quiet. Normally they say hello to me. So I got my stuff, went back to the house, went back to actually working out with weights for a while. My dad comes home from work and he says, "Did you hear that the president has been shot?" November 22nd, 1963. That's when I learned of it. That explained the attitude of the people in the post office. They were so quiet. Normally it's kind of a bustling place. That's the memory it brought back. Isn't that peculiar?
I was just a wee lad then. I have absolutely no memory except that there was the old lady who lived next door was babysitting us, and she was watching it on the television, and I remember her just saying over and over again that it's so awful. It's just so, so awful. But I was too young to understand what was going on. But I do remember that.
And this is way before Alexander's birth time, right?
Yes, yeah, unfortunately.
Well, actually, you're fortunate because you'll be around longer than I will. I am as old as the hills.
Well, I guess I'll have to see the way the world is going. I don't know necessarily if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Mm. We wonder if the world will still be here.
Very pertinent question, I think, nowadays.
Okay, you are the opposite of me. You're an adventurer. You're an outdoorsman. I stay inside. And my adventures are mostly verbal, mostly just watching. I mean, I've been out to different places. Where have you traveled and why? Did you even get interested in cryptozoology?
I think the question is probably where have I not been to? I've been quite lucky to visit a lot of locations around not only North America, but other parts of the world. You know, when I talk to people in this subject, oftentimes they get into it because they've had a personal encounter with maybe some mysterious creature or a UFO sighting or some sort of occurrence that got them interested in not only cryptozoology, but maybe the paranormal. Whereas that's one camp prominently, and the other camp seems to be people that just have an interest maybe due to media or just reading about these kinds of materials, and I fall into that second camp. I was a child of the 1990s, so I grew up during kind of the heyday of the X-Files. Obviously, one of the favorite shows, I think, of a lot of people involved in these types of topics, for good reason. I also grew up on some of those documentaries like In Search Of, later on Monster Quest, Animal X. I was very interested in those topics. I began reading on it before social media. You know, we still actually read books then. And then when the internet came around, blogs were a really big thing. So I was heavily influenced by the works of people like Lauren Coleman and others who wrote on blogs such as Cryptomundo. You know, you wouldn't go onto Facebook then to check out what your favorite researcher was doing. You would see if every week, hey, did they post a new blog article this week? You know, what's the latest update on this Bigfoot expedition, or what's the latest Nessie news? That was kind of how we got some of that information. So, I've always been interested in that sort of stuff, and since a young age, just the idea, I think, stems from perhaps the need for adventure and kind of this romantic notion that the world is still a mysterious place, despite how tame it seems, and we as humans have kind of made this world, we're the masters of this domain, so to speak. At least we think so, until you go into the Alaskan wilderness and get thrashed around by rain for 10 days, and you quickly realize that no, we do not control the world entirely. There are still pockets that will absolutely embarrass us as humans, and doesn't matter how good your technology is, Mother Nature will ultimately win. I think that's always been something present and something I've been able to experience, and just kind of the way I look at this topic. And yeah, so I think it stemmed from a curiosity of the world and the mysteries that are still out there is really what got me interested in these topics.
Do you chase after UFOs, or is it strictly cryptids?
Oh, so it's kind of a funny story. I'm not really into the UFO topic, but I sort of am, if that makes sense. So through some of my explorations and some places I've been in different parts of the country, I've actually had a couple of UFO kind of sightings. And I can only really truly call them UFOs by the definition, unidentified flying object, or UAPs, whatever we're calling them now, current day and age. So I've had a sighting in Northern California of this kind of strange thing in the sky zipping around that didn't seem to be normal aircraft pattern, but it was very high up. And probably the most interesting encounter I had, and probably the most interesting thing I've ever personally seen in my life, to be honest, would have been a UFO sighting in Pennsylvania with a number of colleagues, some of whom you may know, Paul Eno from Behind the Paranormal, and a few others who are more involved into the UFO topics. We had had a kind of strange sighting out there in a property we were investigating, which had a history of anomalous activity, shadow people, kind of a triangle window area. Some folks like to call it high strangeness, I suppose would be a better term. There was also some Bigfoot activity. Pennsylvania is fairly known for being one of the top 10 states for Sasquatch sightings. I mean, there's just a lot of rural nothing between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. So there's a lot of hunters in the woods. Pennsylvania has the most hunters in the U.S. So a lot of people in the woods to see strange things. And we're investigating this property. And this was in June of 2019. And I have a full write-up of the incident as well as the footage on my website, pedikovmedia.com. But we watched this object for about 5-10 minutes, just meandering through the sky, almost like a leaf floating in slow motion. And how I would describe it as was a illuminated cloud. So there was no clouds at all in the sky. There was a little bit of star cover. We were up on a hill, rural Pennsylvania, so you had pretty good visibility. Nothing obstructing our view, and we begin to see what looks like a cloud with a light inside of it. And I initially thought it was sort of a maybe the cloud in front of the moon, but I didn't make any sense for the moon to be that low, and it was moving, and it just sort of drifted along, and then we watched smaller, more defined, brighter lights fly out of this object, around it, and back into it. And we watched this for a little while, and some of the guys I was with, again, people like Paulino and some of the others, have been more interested in the UFO topic than myself and said it was one of the most interesting ones they've ever seen. Luckily, Paul managed to film the footage, and we have it on a night vision camera. And in the footage, you can see two objects flying parallel, one much smaller, the other one larger, in a sort of weird slow motion pattern, and they kind of become one. It's, again, on my website. Very strange kind of incident. So, yes, I wouldn't say I actively investigate the UFO topic, but I suppose I am aware of it just because of what I experienced. It sort of opened my eyes a little bit to that, which is sort of ironic because I grew up and live in the state of New Hampshire, which is very well known for, of course, the Betty and Barney Hill incident, as well as the Exeter UFO incident. So there's a little bit of that history here, but I never really paid attention to it. I was always more interested in Bigfoot and the mystery creatures. But now, you know, when I hear an interesting UFO story, it definitely piques my interest. Of course, that topic is quite well known nowadays.
We've got Alexander, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
It's obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media are distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the real concerns of American families. Countries we're at odds with are hoarding food, financial systems are strained, and supply chains remain too fragile. We can tell something is coming, so we're preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. And while you're there, stock up on water filtration, heirloom seeds, and emergency gear, too, at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Alexander Petikoff is an adventurer, a man about town who learned in the Orient to seek... No, that's a different story. He's too young to know what that is. So I won't upset him with all that. An avid outdoorsman. You hunt too or what?
So no, I'm not a hunter per se of animals in the sense of killing them. I do track animals and I'm very interested in finding out what certain animals do. I mean, even here at my home in New Hampshire, we have moose and black bear and all the sort of northeast woodland critters. I haven't quite gotten into hunting yet, but yeah, I would say hunting in the sense, instead of a gun, I have a camera. That's usually, and that's kind of my approach with a topic like Sasquatch as well.
Hunting. Have you photographed Sasquatch?
Not personally, no. Well, I did get some thermal footage in Kentucky, actually, which it's a stretch to say it would be a Sasquatch. It was just a very large, mysterious object over 1,000 feet away from me on a hillside in rural Kentucky in an area with known Sasquatch activity. I just heard kind of a strange sound, a supposed wood knock, which some people believe are a communication method that Sasquatches might use. There's actually research that shows that chimpanzees use sticks and rocks and throw them at trees and smack them against trees to communicate with one another, which is interesting because in the Sasquatch topic you have a lot of these strange parallels between reported behavior that people in North America talk about and things being discovered in great apes that previously were not known or behaviors. But anyway, back to Kentucky, yeah, I'm filming on this hillside, and I was alone at night in this location. It was late November before Thanksgiving, and I was in an area with quite a history of activity. Show Monster Quest had a bioacoustics professor in the same location. A number of years ago, they had rocks thrown at them, some of the typical sort of stuff. But I was out alone, and I happened to be scanning on this hill just with a small thermal unit I had, a thermal camera, which shows you the heat signatures of pretty much anything in the area, including rodents. I mean, you can really see a lot of detail with some of these advanced thermal units. And I'm walking back to my car to warm up a little bit. It was about 22 degrees that night. Very brutal cold, not what you expect in Kentucky, me being from the Northeast. But I happened to scan up on this hill, and I noticed this very large heat signature. I actually didn't believe it was anything alive at the time because of its size and shape and how distant it was from me. I thought, oh, it must just be, as I point the thermal up towards the top of the tree line, sometimes some of the trees and the rocks that are heating up during the day will actually give you a heat signature. So that's fully what I thought it might have been. I go back into my car for a little bit just to warm up, and I come back outside and film that same area, and that object is completely gone. And then, of course, being able to review it afterwards, you know, in the field, you're staring to a small screen is how you're looking at it. So it's not exactly a great way to see something. When you put it on a screen, a larger screen like a laptop or a desktop computer, you finally get to see it in more detail. The object did seem to be animate, and it was just sort of sitting there. I don't know. I mean, I filmed a deer the previous night in that same location, much closer to me, and it was far smaller than this object, which was almost twice as far as that deer was. And there's no known bears in that area, at least black bears. And even if there were a black bear, it was late November, extremely cold. They would have been probably hibernating by that time point. So I can't say what it was. It was just very unusual. It was just kind of a blob-like shape. We jokingly call those blob squatches. So I don't know what it was. It was just unusual. I do hope to return to that location and try some experimenting in terms of being able to have somebody up in that location and do a size comparison and see, does it match or is it something more mundane? But that's probably the closest I've gotten to some sort of footage of something. Other than that, we've had other strange encounters, the typical sort of reported behavior that fits what is described with Sasquatch, including vocalizations, rocks thrown in your direction, wood knocks, so-called whoops. Again, a lot of these behaviors that actually are parallel in other apes and other primates that we know of, which is very fascinating.
Did you receive special training in learning how to do this or what?
No, there's not really any formal authority in terms of cryptozoology or Sasquatchology, whatever you want to call it. There's no formal training. It's just sort of whatever experience you bring with you. In my case, I'm a filmmaker, but I also did do some wilderness survival training back in the day, and I've done some extensive backpacking throughout parts of the Northeast and out west in the Rocky Mountains, in Alaska, parts of Canada, elsewhere. So just try to be as objective as possible. I think Occam's razor is a great way to look at this. You know, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. I think Sasquatch, when it comes to Sasquatch, the evidence is far and few between. Skepticism is very warranted. So, yeah, there's no formal training. It's just sort of you learn as you go along. And what better way to learn than to start interviewing eyewitnesses, start going out in the field and challenging yourself, going at times where you think the chances of having some sort of interaction might be highest. Don't believe every sound you hear in the woods is a Sasquatch. It's probably not, and most likely not. And importantly, you know, stick to the facts. Don't deviate from the facts, as famed Sasquatch researcher Thomas Steinberg would say, who's, I think, a very good rational thinker in this field. But being able to debunk your own evidence as well. If you have something you think is Sasquatch or you're having some kind of encounter, the last thing you should assume that it is Sasquatch, unless you're physically seeing one in front of you. Even then, you know, I'd be skeptical and I'd want to have somebody almost interrogate me just to see if that's truly what I saw. It's not me wishful thinking, projecting some kind of image, because those sorts of things might be able to happen. You know, you look for something so long and you get so frustrated and maybe you conjure it up in your mind. I don't know. But I think just being as rational and skeptical as possible while also not being completely closed off to the possibilities is very important. So, yeah, it's just kind of you learn as you go along. And again, I just use some of my previous skills and backgrounds in terms of video and working with cameras and different camera systems as well as some wilderness experience to kind of fill in the gap and it helps you because nowadays I think most people are not versed for being out in the woods or being out in the wilderness at all. Most people live in urban or suburban areas. We're moving away from cities. Even 100, 150 years ago, all of our ancestors were far more adapted to living closer to the land than we currently are, given our technology and all that that kind of comes along with that. So we've lost a lot of those instincts. I think trying to cultivate those is very important for people. I think it should be something that more people do.
Well, certainly if you want to start on something, it's certainly an interesting way to get something going, especially if you have some career aspirations that might include exploration. What part of New Hampshire are you in, by the way?
So I'm in southern New Hampshire. New Hampshire is not a very small, it's not a very large state, I should say, for folks who aren't familiar. It's up in the northeastern part of the U.S. Most of the time when I travel places, people have no idea where it is. They think everything up here is just Boston. But New Hampshire is actually the second most forested state by the amount of forest percentage-wise after neighboring Maine, which is number one, which connects to New Hampshire connects to Vermont. We also share a border with Canada, the province of Quebec, millions of acres of woods between all those territories. Maine and New Hampshire have some of the highest moose populations in the U.S. outside of Alaska. So they support huge 1,200-pound animals. Sasquatch, I don't think, is a stretch in that case. But that's where I'm at, in New Hampshire, southern New Hampshire, beautiful area.
Alexander, Gene, Tim, got more to talk about strange creatures. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
USA News Update. Former President Trump has a 46-point lead over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in a new Wall Street Journal poll. The survey also has President Biden and Trump deadlocked in a theoretical general election matchup. Biden visited the worst-hit areas of Florida Saturday from last week's Hurricane Idalia. He vowed to provide federal support to those in need. A Florida judge on Saturday struck down congressional district lines for northern Florida advocated by DeSantis, ruling that the governor's map had improperly diluted black voting power, CNN reported. Jimmy Buffett died. The legendary singer was 76. He's famous for Margaritaville, Cheeseburger in Paradise, and other sing-along favorites. The Equalizer 3 is on pace to become the second-best Labor Day weekend debut. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Speaking of strange creatures, Tim Swartz is our co-host. Alexander Petikoff is a filmmaker and explorer of the strange and the unknown. Now, speaking of New Hampshire, I lived in Claremont, New Hampshire for a year or two, way back before you were born.
Yeah, beautiful area. I know that's over by the Vermont border there, not far from the Connecticut River.
Exactly.
Beautiful area. Mount Ascutney, you might be familiar with, not that far from Claremont. You probably would have had a view from town. There's been some reports, a couple of Bigfoot Field Research Organization reports in that area around Mount Ascutney. I've heard rumors, stories of Sasquatches in the area. I have yet to venture over there to investigate, but definitely an interesting area.
Looking at all the places you visited, what was the first one?
Oh, that's a good question. One of the first kind of endeavors I did in terms of cryptozoology film was actually Loch Ness. It was after I got out of school back in 2015. I took a trip, my family being originally from the Balkans, Serbia and that area, Southeast Europe. I had spent some time over there with family, and I decided to take a trip to Scotland to visit, of course, the famous Loch Ness. And I was poking around Loch Ness for a few days, interviewed some folks, kind of got a feel for the area, and then put a short documentary together about that. So that was one of the first places. I wouldn't really call it an investigation. It was more of a tourist trip that I turned into a little video. But it was really interesting going to a place that you've heard talked about for so long. Ever since I was a kid, I'd heard about Loch Ness, seen it in many documentaries, so many books, magazines, you name it. And to actually go there and be able to experience it, it's one of those kind of bucket list locations. And now looking on, I'm actually more skeptical about the story of Loch Ness than perhaps other lake monster stories around the world, such as Lake Champlain just here in my backyard in New England, in Vermont. Yeah, that would have been one of the first kind of cryptozoological endeavors that I sort of formally did before. You know, there were things that I was just enthusiastic about, but Loch Ness was a lifelong kind of dream to investigate.
So what is your conclusion about Loch Ness then?
Well, see, I don't know if I have a certain set conclusion, but I do kind of lean towards the possibility that there, whatever was in the lake or may have been, might be extinct. We've had a drop-off in sightings in the last few years. Just a few days ago, actually, there was the largest Nessie hunt search, if you want to call it, in the last 50 or so years since the 1970s. There was a big effort, a lot of TV crews out there, people with thermal drones, that sort of thing. I actually knew a few of the investigators involved. They didn't really turn up any interesting evidence, but it seems like there's been a lot of stories over the years that might be able to be attributed to other known creatures or sea life, such as seals maybe getting into the loch or other animals. I mean, some of the original sightings that you look at actually from the 1930s at Loch Ness seem to be heavily influenced by the film King Kong. Some of the first sightings describe that plesiosaur-like creature, and that was 1933, same year, I believe, when King Kong came out, and they have that famous sequence of some of the crew there getting away from a swimming dinosaur, which was this plesiosaur-like creature, and that's actually directly referenced, I believe, by some of the early Loch Ness witnesses in terms of that story. So I think there's a lot with Loch Ness. It's sort of this popular culture myth sort of area, and I think there's no coincidence that it is one of the most tourist-heavy areas of Scotland. I mean, it's one of the number one tourist attractions consistently in Scotland. So I imagine some of the people in that area probably have a little bit of an incentive to keep a little bit of that mystery and that story kind of going, directly opposing something like the Lake Champlain monster, which happens to kind of occur in the Lake Champlain area in Vermont and upstate New York, bordering Canada. That, I think, has a lot more interesting details into it as a lake monster story. And there's actually, you know, there's not really a huge tourist incentive for Champ or Champy, as the monster is called. That's not why people visit Lake Champlain. They go to Burlington. They go to upstate New York. They go boating and fishing. It's a very different situation than Loch Ness, which is almost dependent on the mystery of the monster to kind of keep it afloat, so to speak.
There's a lot of similarities between Lake Champlain and Loch Ness. I mean, they're both deep freshwater lakes, though I don't know if Lake Champlain, unlike Loch Ness, doesn't connect anywhere with the ocean like Loch Ness does. You know, if you look along the same, latitude, you seem to find reports of lake monsters within, you know, these deep freshwater types of lakes.
Yes, there is a little bit of a history of that. Now, a lot of this is very fresh in my mind at the moment. I just gave a presentation last weekend about the Lake Champlain monster at a exhibit near Albany, New York. They have a museum, Do You Believe exhibit, and they have some Bigfoot and mythical creature stuff. It's all fresh in my mind. I did a Loch Ness or a Champ on the Trail of Champ documentary back in 2017 and 2018. And since then, I've mostly done Sasquatch stuff. So statistically, Lake Champlain blows Loch Ness out of the water, and I'll tell you why in a moment here. But you're right. They are two lakes that are very similar latitudes, northern hemisphere, formerly glaciated areas, heavy glacier wear. That's why the lakes kind of have the shape that they do. But Lake Champlain, as opposed to Loch Ness, is about 120 miles long. It's about 12 miles wide, 420 feet deep at the deepest, whereas Loch Ness is, I believe, only less than 20 miles long, only a few miles wide at the widest, and considerably deeper, 700 to 800 feet, supposedly, at least that we know of. So they do have some similarities, but Lake Champlain is a much larger habitat. It also happens to be one of the most biodiverse lakes in North America. It's a world-class bass fishing spot. There's humongous fish such as sturgeon there. I have photo evidence of sturgeons in the past that have been pulled out of the lake that are easily 10 to 14 feet long, which, you know, if that were to pull up next to your small kayak, would be by definition a monster. Both Loch Ness and Lake Champlain do connect to the ocean, albeit in controlled manner. So Loch Ness connects to the Atlantic, the North Atlantic there, in through the River Ness, which goes through downtown Inverness, Scotland, and the other side through the Caledonian Canal, which is controlled with a lot of different locks water goes up and down, and there's you wouldn't be able to get in one sort of swim. Boats have to wade through the locks, and Lake Champlain is also connected to the ocean through the Hudson River and its southern point, which kind of terminates out by New York City, of course. So right in that area. And again, it's controlled by locks and different measures of keeping certain parts of the water. So nothing that would be going in would essentially be able to get out, or vice versa. And the northern part of Lake Champlain connects then to the St. Lawrence Seaway, eventually through the province of Quebec in Canada. And there's actually a drop in elevation with the water. And so whatever, if there's something in the lake, it would have to be trapped. But again, it is a massive environment, much more biodiverse than Loch Ness. Loch Ness is not very well known for its huge amount of fish species. It's actually quite low. The water is very murky with this peat kind of built up, and their visibility is very low. Whereas Lake Champlain, I mean, I've seen humongous fish in Lake Champlain. It's very much a much more viable habitat, in my opinion, for something that potentially might be unknown. Then that's the question. Is there something? That's what we don't know. But if we're simply looking at statistically in terms of what's a better habitat, Lake Champlain is definitely superior, at least in my view.
Well, like Loch Ness, Lake Champlain has had some interesting on-the-land sightings of a strange creature as well.
Yeah, there have been a few sightings that I'm aware of that have happened in the past. Nothing in recent history, at least in terms of the last 10 to 15 years. But I think back in the 70s and 80s, there was one gentleman I interviewed for my On the Trail of Champs series back in 2018. He described seeing this plesiosaur-looking creature on the beach near Port Henry, New York, which affectionately calls itself the home of Champ, and they have a famous sign with some of the sightings on it. And he saw this creature and kind of said it was kind of hanging out on the beach close to the water, had a blackish, dark sort of skin and almost white scratches and marks all over the body, like you might see in a whale or perhaps a manatee, which I thought was a very interesting detail.
We will have more with Alexander for the description. And Gene and Tim, you're in
the Podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you love mysteries, you'll love these two books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll learn about the strange beings that can look like us, but are not. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll see the hard evidence of UFOs that has been ignored or even hidden. These books will definitely blow your mind, and both are now available on Amazon.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over a million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Alexander Petikoff, Tim Swartz, Gene Steinberg. Alexander, you were in the middle of a description we'd like to hear more about.
Yeah, absolutely. The sighting in Port Henry, of which I interviewed the witness back in 2017, he described this creature with blackish, brown, dark sort of skin, plesiosaur-like, with white scratches or marks along its body and on the sides, not unsimilar to perhaps a whale or a manatee, sort of aquatic kind of animal interaction you might get from hitting a propeller or scraping along rocks or whatever the case may be. I just thought that was a really interesting detail that he mentioned that. He said that this creature then swam off. Once it kind of noticed him pulling up in the car, got into the water and swam off and created a big commotion in terms of waves and wakes and that sort of thing. That's the only on-land sighting that I personally have taken. A number of the other eyewitnesses I've interviewed described mostly in the water, you know, dinosaur-like head or just humps, a giant turtle-looking creature in the water. And actually just this past weekend when I was at this convention in New York talking about CHAMP, I was told a very interesting story from Port Henry. I can't say it's CHAMP, but I find it pretty intriguing. I had a guy come up to my table and said, hey, so you're doing some of this CHAMP stuff? And I said, yes, I am. He said, well, you know, when I was 14 or 15, I was out on near Port Henry, New York, on Lake Champlain, doing some tubing with my family friends in their boat. And I was in a tube, and I got disconnected from the boat, and they were going up the bay to turn around and come back and get me. And he's just laying there in the tube with his legs kind of hanging in the mesh in between the tubing. And he says that something came up and put its mouth around his leg. Yeah. He said it was a slow sort of cupping almost of his leg. He described it almost like a face. He didn't feel teeth or any pain. He said it was a slow, and it just kind of wrapped around his leg, and then he freaked out and started thrashing, and by the time the boat came back, everyone was kind of laughing, and nobody took his sighting seriously. But he said he was around 14 or 15 at the time, which, you know, if he was 6 or 7, you know, maybe okay, you might be exaggerating a bit, but as a teenager, you're already kind of in, you have a little bit more of an ability to observe. So I thought that was really interesting because he didn't mention teeth again. If it was some sort of a big fish, maybe a sturgeon or a pike or something that might be present in the lake, it would have been a thrash. If you've seen fish thrashing and catching other fish, I mean, it's a quick, violent motion. It would have been too big to be a lamprey. It basically wrapped around the whole lower part of his calf, as he described it. So I don't know what that is. That's very weird. There's a lot of strange things in Lake Champlain, but I'm certainly no marine biologist, so I wouldn't be able to say. But he thought it was a very weird kind of occurrence, and didn't really get a good look at whatever this was. But that's the freshest of the weird Lake Champlain stories I've been told. I thought that was very, very intriguing.
I had run across the story, and and now, of course, I can't remember the exact details, but I think that this happened like back in the 1940s, where the witness was on the shore somewhere and came across this. It was small but bigger than a normal salamander, which is the way he described it. He said it looked like a large salamander, but still, I mean, you know, small enough that, you know, it wasn't like, you know, freaky size. But he said that he did not recognize the species, and, you know, he'd lived there for quite a while, and that it scampered off into the rocks. And then years later, he started to wonder, was that a baby champ? I just always found that, you know, an interesting story.
Interesting. I haven't heard that one specifically that I'm personally aware of. I know there was a case of somebody claiming that they had captured a baby champ, and it turned out to be a mud puppy, which is a fairly large salamander, which if you were to hold one, I mean, you could hold it in kind of one hand how large they are. They're much larger than a normal salamander. I don't know about that case specifically, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. There have been stories allegedly of people finding strange carcasses washed up on the shore there, other kinds of things like that. So unfortunately, with it being just a story, you know, we don't have any way of actually tracing kind of the origins or being able to figure it out. But with a lot of these sightings and stories, that's all we have, is just the kind of anecdotal story of somebody seeing something and it gets away. That's what we're left with dealing with quite a bit in this topic. But that's really interesting. I'll have to do more digging on that and see if I can dig up anything in some of my archives on that.
Well, I mean, and you also have, I mean, just the excellent work of Katie Elizabeth, who was the one who recorded some very interesting audio from Lake Champlain.
Yeah, actually, the original person who got some of the kind of strange audio was a lady named Elizabeth von Muggenthaler. This was back in the early 2000s. She'd done some kind of work with bioacoustics before, and she was on Lake Champlain doing some research and claimed to have recorded echolocations, which are these kind of clicking sounds that whales and other animals use to sort of communicate underwater. That's what she claimed, and that was actually featured in the original first ever episode of the show Monster Quest, which covered various cryptid creatures around the world. And that was their Lake Champlain expedition. They went out with von Muggenthaler, and I have actually known quite a few researchers who have subsequently passed away. Two of the, I think, best champ researchers, which would have been Scott Martis and William Drank Innes. They were some great guys, and they did a lot of work on the topic, especially Scott Martis. He was probably one of the most knowledgeable people about lake monsters in general. Passed away just a couple of years ago. But they both worked with von Muggenthaler before she kind of dropped off the radar in the mid to late kind of early 2000s. And they said that, yeah, they thought it was really interesting, and they kind of adopted a little bit of the method as well of trying to look for some of the bioacoustic stuff. But it's something that's so very hard to work with. You kind of have to know some of what you're doing. So it's not like you can just kind of pick it up. You kind of have to get some hands-on experience, maybe working with whales or other marine life, that orcas, dolphins, that sort of thing, that use this sort of echolocation. But the premise was that some creature in Lake Champlain was producing echolocations. Now, I've seen some pushback to that, saying that maybe we're starting to learn that fish can actually produce some sort of clicking and possible noises like that underwater. But it's still such a frontier. It's so there's so many questions, I should say. There's really nobody looking at that very intensely, at least in terms of an academic kind of, there's no university that's studying, is there something in Lake Champlain echolocating, right? It's just mostly people who are enthusiasts who take it up into their own hands.
You have drumfish, which are, you know, I mean, they're practically everywhere in North America, and they've actually have they have rocks in their head that they'll click together to make a very distinctive noise. And you know, there's all kinds of freshwater fish that will make weird noises. All you have to do is just you know, swim around to these lakes and stick your head underwater, and you can hear some things that can, you know, scare the hell out of you if you're not if you don't know what you're listening to.
That's a great point. Yes, drumfish is a great example. I've actually heard some of the alleged Lake Champlain echolocation recordings have been explained away as just drumfish by some people who are more in the know. So that is absolutely a possibility. That's the thing. You know, how many people do you know that own a device that's able to, a microphone essentially that goes underwater that you're able to listen for echolocations with? It's not something that's very common, right? So we don't know. I mean, there's so much we're unfamiliar with when it comes to the water, and a lot of people have a fear of the water. It's just something that's very unusual, and it's not our domain, right? Humans are not adapted at all to be underwater. So that's why I think even the ocean, when it comes to cryptozoology or just mysteries, how vast the ocean is and how much there is unknown in the oceans, is kind of frightening, and most of the world is ocean. So that's what I think a lot of people don't really realize, but it's something that makes people uncomfortable, whether it be stuff like Jaws or just kind of the vast expanses of wilderness. It's not wilderness in the forested sense, but it's wilderness of ocean, and it's all underneath. So it invokes a lot of mystery, I think.
Does the vastness of the area you have to pick from explain very much why it's so difficult to nailed this down?
Yeah, I absolutely do believe so. I think you look at, for example, I just spent about a month and a half up in Alaska. So I actually drove from the East Coast of the U.S. all the way up to Alaska. And you think you know how large North America is. And before that, you know, I've been to Alaska before. I've been to parts of Canada, lower 48 U.S. It's a huge place. But once you physically drive across the continent from one side to the other, you truly realize how large it is and how much there is, how little there is, I should say, between points A and points B. There's especially Canada. I think Canada is a really prime example of this. It's the second largest country on Earth, right, after Russia. I mean, there's just land mass wise, Canada is incredible. And its population is, what, 30 million? I mean, it's far less than the United States. And most of that population lives within a few hours drive of the U.S. border. And almost, I think, 60 to 70% of that population lives south of North Dakota.
Hey, you know what? Let's go into more of this. Do some more exploration with Alexander, Tim, and Gene. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Former CIA officer and survival expert Jason Hansen here. I teach people how to prepare for the unexpected. Right now, most Americans are not ready for the death of the U.S. dollar. You have money sitting in cash, and if you don't act soon, your financial future could be at risk. I have partnered with Advantage Gold, the number one rated precious metals company in America, to release my new digital dollar survival kit that's 100% free for everyone who calls today and claims your free survival kit. Simply call 800-900-8000 and give your email address, and I will have this new digital dollar survival kit sent to you immediately. Call 1-800-900-8000 now and claim your free kit, and also mention my name, Jason Hansen, and see how you could also qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Supplies are limited, so call right now before it's too late. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.